Hello, everyone. This is Persephone 33, and you're listening to the December 2007 Fire and Dice podcast for DracoandJenny.com. Season's greetings. Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and all that. I'm going to channel that very small part of me that is not the biggest Grinch you've ever met and read seasonal, Christmassy, dare I say, merry stories. But first, the part of the podcast where I wish all of you December babies a happy birthday by butchering the pronunciation of your usernames. Our birthdays this month include Mego and Eustacia Vi, who I am unsure of the dates for, but happy birthday, ladies. Sweet and Precious Caramel Silver on the 8th, Rarity and Hajira on the 15th, Adora May on the 18th, Kate and VA, and Pecky on the 30th. So happy birthday, ladies, and may all of your wishes for your birthday come true. So if you've been listening and your name isn't being called out on the birthday, there's a nifty little thing under celebrations on the forums. Moran or DL will put you on the list and you get wished a happy birthday. Poof. Easy. As always, also, if there's a story you're dying to hear, you go to the forums and under podcast suggestific thread, you can wreck away. Otherwise, you get to hear all my favorites. And that's fabulous as well, but anyhow, plus, in other news, the Caligo Ortis RPG is looking for some players. They need a Hermione Granger and an Alicia Spinnet, I believe. So if you're dying to play either of those ladies, submit an application to DracoandJenny.com/Caliga. If you go to that site, it'll direct you to applications and so forth. Lots of your favorite authors write over there, all different kinds of characters, and there's DG too, so that's always a plus. Lots of different ships and new ships, so check it out. So the Christmassy fix for this month include Snow Angels by Indigo Child, which is not naughty, Far Off Fields by Fear the Inn, which is not naughty, Upon a Midnight Clear by Pecky, which is sorta naughty, Benediction by Morning Broken Angel, which is not naughty, and Cedar, Columbine, Coriander, and Hemlock by Tudorose 1533, which is definitely naughty. So I'll be reading that one last, and those of you who are not of age, you can just turn off the podcast, and I know you will, before the definitely naughty fic gets read out loud. All right, there's your mommy reprimand for today. I should probably tell you what went on with the November podcast. Cinnamon Badge was going to do it, but Real Life intervened and she had some horrible computer problems that sounded terrible. So she's going to try again for January. And so you get to hear cool Cinnamon Badge and her podcast in January. And she'll have lots of time off to get that done for then. All right, without further ado, ladies, the fix. Far Off Fields, A Christmas Tale by Fear the Inn. Where are the far-off plains and white, the fading forests grow, the wind dies out along the height, and denser still the snow. A gathering weight on roof and tree falls down scarce audibly. From Snow by Archibald Lampman. She heard them before she saw them, shrieks of laughter echoing in the still air, muffled slightly by the falling snow, but clear as bells all the same. In the curious gray non-light, under the cloud colors, stood out brightly the banners on the Quidditch towers, the red and gold in their scarves, the menacing green-black trees of the Forbidden Forest, their hair red and black and brown, all caked with falling snow. Ginny huffed in disgust. A shimmering rush of icy air surrounding her hair, face and hair, wreathing her in silver. Ron and Harry and Hermione, laughing and chasing each other with snowballs, didn't even glance back at the castle where Ginny sat down on the steps and buried her face in her knees with a sigh. She had said she'd only be a minute. She only had to run up to the tower to get her cloak, and instead of waiting, as Ron had promised they would, they'd gone off without her, down into Hogsmeade for the day. It was Christmas Eve, and despite the ever-present danger, Dumbledore had said they might visit the town for a little while. She was cold now and suddenly tired, and she was shocked to discover horribly lonely. She didn't want to sit out here in the snow watching her brother and his friends make their way across the school grounds to go off and have fun without her, but she didn't want to begin the long, slow trek back up to Gryffindor Tower to sit and mope and be forgotten about either. So she sat, head down, curled in as small a ball as possible. The cold was seeping through her cloak and robes, making her shiver slightly, but she didn't move.
"If you don't get up, you'll freeze there."
The sound of that drawling voice made her jerk her head up and around, whipping fire-gold hair around her head in staticky frenzy. She knew that voice, although it was seldom directed at her, and it was no surprise to find Draco Malfoy behind her, tall and elegant and handsome in his winter robes, leaning one arm instantly on the stone banister. "What do you want, Malfoy?" He raised one shoulder in an arrogant shrug, his cool gray eyes pinning her to the steps.
"Merely stating a fact, Weasley. If you don't get up, you'll freeze to the steps. It's cold enough."
"What do you care?" She knew she was being rude, but she couldn't seem to help herself. This was Malfoy, after all, and that slow, superior voice made her grit her teeth every time she heard it.
"Did I say I cared?"
He shifted slightly, rolling off his elbow to lean back against the handrail, hands shoved into his pockets. He was wearing a gorgeous cloak, Ginny couldn't help but notice, a rich, deep charcoal, double-lined in lamb's wool, with a silver ermine trim around the hood that set off his hair and eyes wonderfully. His robes were the same fine material, dark and thick, and above all, warm-looking. She hunched her shoulders into her own worn cloak and shivered again, and then shoved herself to her feet. "What do you want?" she demanded, planting her feet on the top of the stair, hands on hips. "If you've come out here to bother Ron and Harry..."
"I did not come out here to bother your precious Harry, Weasley. I wanted some fresh air."
He narrowed those icy eyes at her.
"Despite what you may think, my entire existence does not revolve around Harry Potter, unlike some people I could name."
He shifted his gaze from her, looking out over the green, suddenly disinterested. Ginny gaped at him, knowing that it made her look horribly unattractive, but unable to help herself. "My existence does not revolve around Harry!"
"Of course it doesn't," Draco said lazily. "That's why you're out here in the cold watching him have a snowball fight with his friends. Or is it that you just don't have any friends of your own?"
Ginny's cheeks flushed with the heat, the offhand remark startlingly close to the truth. "I do so have friends."
"Right."
It was amazing, Ginny reflected, exactly how much scorn could be put into a single syllable. She glared at him, her fists clenching and a burning sensation welling up behind her eyes. She would not cry in front of Draco Malfoy. She wouldn't. She settled for glaring at him and stalking up the steps. She swept past him as haughtily as she could, pulling open the huge front door and yanking it shut behind her. She stopped and sagged against the door, the tears she refused to shed in front of Malfoy rolling down her cheeks, because the thing was, he was right. She didn't have any friends, not really, unless she counted Colin, and Ginny didn't. Or Neville. But Nev had gone home for the holidays. The girls in her year went unutterably silly, and she avoided them as much as she could, preferring even Colin and his little tag-along brother to the nest of ninnies, as she was wont to call them. Ginny thumped her head against the door in frustrated self-pity, willing her tears to stop. No point in crying just because Ron was oblivious and Malfoy was a git. Muttering her way up to Gryffindor Tower, she thought of all the things she could have said. "I don't see your little bully boys around, Malfoy. Don't you have any friends either?" Or, "Even tagging after my brother's friends would be better than having to hang about with Slytherins."
Or, she sighed and stopped. She really wasn't in the mood for thinking about nasty things about Malfoy. It was Christmas, and she didn't want to spoil it by being horrible, even to people like Malfoy, who deserved it. She settled for curling up in the common room with a novel filched from one of the ninnies, munching on shortbread cookies from Mum's care package. Ron and Harry and Hermione came back hours later, stuffed with sweets and last-minute presents, and tales of how they'd spotted Malfoy slinking about in glad rags doing who knew what, and what on earth was he doing at school for Christmas anyway, which was a common matter of conjecture around the common room since all the other Slytherins had gone home, barring one or two first years, and Malfoy never stayed for Christmas. Ron and Harry and Hermione talked about it in dire-sounding half-whispers when they got bored of talking about other things. Ginny watched them unhappily from her chair by the fire. They didn't notice her there, not even when she got up and slipped out past the fat lady. Ginny was wandering aimlessly through one of the fourth-floor corridors. She'd gone to the library, but it was too cold to be comfortable, so she was indulging in one of her favorite pastimes and playing Get Lost with herself. She had made up this game in third year, wandering round the castle to see how far she could get before having to resort to asking the armor or portraits for directions. Now, in her sixth year, there were very few places she didn't recognize within Hogwarts walls. She'd even stumbled across a hidden passageway or two that she didn't think anyone else knew about. She'd been down this corridor before, she knew. She had a vague recollection of its origins somewhere near the North Tower, and its eventual end in a seldom-used stairwell that led down to the dungeons. It was deserted now, of course, the odd torch flickering here and there over the dust that drifted in the corners. Silence lay over the hall, muffling any noise she might make, and she fancied she could hear the snow falling outside if she listened hard enough. It felt like she was the only person alive left in the world, prowling the shadowed halls, a thrillingly eerie thought. So it nearly frightened her out of her wits when a door opened directly in front of her and she walked smack into Draco Malfoy. He let out an extremely undignified yelp, in counterpoint to her terrified shriek, and stumbled back from her in alarm. "What the hell are you doing here, Weasley?" he demanded. Ginny had doubled over, one hand steadying herself against the stone wall, as she pressed the other to her chest in an effort to stop her heart pounding. "I could ask you the same question, Malfoy. You nearly scared me to death."
"I am studying," he said loftily, drawing himself up, his familiar smirk in place again as he waved his hand at the room he'd just exited.
Ginny glanced toward the door at the deserted classroom beyond.
"What are you doing?"
Ginny straightened her shoulders and lifted her chin.
"I'm out for a walk," she replied, just as loftily. "And there's no rule saying I can't, so just push off!"
Draco narrowed his eyes at her and opened his mouth, probably to say something scathing. Ginny braced herself, jaw set, and mentally refusing to let him get to her, when an icy breeze swept past them both and coalesced into Peeves the Poltergeist. The small ghost swirled about in the air between them, swooping back and forth, cackling and waving a small sprig of leaves and berries over their head. Draco and Ginny looked at each other in horror. Peeves had discovered the wonders of mistletoe earlier in December and had been harassing students and staff alike with sprigs of the plant and doing awful things to anyone who wouldn't snog whoever happened to be closest. Professor Snape still had a green spots over his face for refusing to kiss Professor Flitwick, and poor little Mindy Malone, a Ravenclaw first year, wasn't even allowed out of the hospital wing. Peeves grinned horribly at Draco and Ginny in turn and began making great smacking noises with his mouth.
"Kissy, kissy, kissy," he cackled.
For a moment, Ginny was tempted to flee, but she gave it up as a bad job. Running from Peeves only served to encourage him. She looked at Draco, who had gone paler than usual, and was staring back at her and suddenly looking vulnerable, his gray eyes huge in his thin face. Peeves made a particularly loud noise and whirled threateningly, and both of them hurriedly took a few steps closer to each other.
I suppose we have to,"
Jenny said resignedly, and held her hand out to Draco, who nodded and took it.
I suppose.
He cleared his throat and gazed down at her with those unreadable gray eyes. His hand was cool and smooth, and Jenny was startled to discover, trembling slightly in her own. He raised his other hand and rested it lightly on her shoulder and leaned his head toward her. She had a brief impression of pine trees and snow and damp wool and a scent she could only describe as boy, and then his lips were on hers and he was kissing her. So she did the most sensible thing she could think of under the circumstances and kissed him back. And it was wonderful. He tasted like chocolate and sugar and butterbeer, and Ginny's mind was whirling as crazily as Peeves ever had, full of a strange, tingling warmth that spread from her stomach through her whole body. She could feel his hands at her neck and waist. The sensations were both immediate and impossibly far away, somehow less important than the way his lips moved against hers, the way their breath mingled. She wrapped her arms around his neck, sliding her fingers into his hair, and Draco made a low, soft noise in his throat and pulled her closer. There was a huge crash, and they sprang apart, looking guiltily at anything but each other. The cause of the noise was apparent. Peeves, upset at their enthusiasm, had knocked over a suit of armor which lay scattered across the floor in pieces. The poltergeist spun around in the air, cackling with glee now that he was the center of attention again, and swooped off down the hall. Jenny cleared her throat nervously and glanced at Draco, who had stuffed his hands in the pockets of his robe and was leaning against the wall, examining the toes of his boots.
I should...
She stammered to a halt and took a deep breath.
I should probably go.
Yeah. Draco said without looking up.
She didn't know what made her do it, an instinctual impulse, she supposed, that made her stop and move back to him. He looked up when she reached his side and gasped, startled, when she slipped her arms around him and rested her head against his chest. Draco froze for a moment, and then his arms went around her, and he held her tight, resting his cheek against the top of her head, one hand gently winding itself in her hair. Another noise from the stairwell at the end of the hall yanked them apart again, reluctantly. Draco looked around the corridor and then down at her, eyes full of apprehension and fear and something else. Whatever it was, it frightened her, too. She felt strange and unsettled by this and by him. She needed to think.
I really should go,
she whispered, and spun around on her heel before she couldn't leave. She raced down the corridor, back the way she had come, running full tilt until she skidded to a breathless stop in front of the fat lady. The fat lady's friend Violet was with her, and they tittered and teased at Jenny while she got her breath and composure back before venturing into the common room. It was still cold when she woke up on Christmas morning, cold enough that she could see her breath faintly in the air. Jenny sighed and rubbed at her head. An entire evening of thinking and a mostly sleepless night had left her no closer to understanding what had happened yesterday with Draco. A Draco with no cruel words, with no sneers or mockery, who had brushed at her hair and caressed her skin like it was the finest porcelain, who had whispered broken, half-heard words and held her like he hadn't ever wanted to let go.
Jenny shook her head abruptly, willingly putting it from her mind. Dwelling on it hadn't helped, so she simply wouldn't think of it at all.
Draco Malfoy. She sighed and shook her head again. The whole thing had just been strange, and she half felt as if she'd imagined the entire episode. With a decisive nod, she pulled her slippers and dressing gown out from under the sheets at the bottom of the bed, where she'd stuffed them to keep them warm during the night. She could hear Ron at the foot of the stairs yelling for herself and Hermione to bring their presents downstairs so they could open them together. Jenny yawned hugely, stuffing her slippers on her feet and her tattered dressing gown over her nightgown and reaching for the small bundle of presents at the foot of her bed. She gathered them all up, and trudged down the stairs after Hermione, juggling presents, wand, and dressing gown him until she got to the common room and managed to collapse into a wing chair. Ron and Harry had already taken over one long couch, with room left over at one end for Hermione, who promptly curled up there, tucking her dressing gown around her knees, and burrowed her feet underneath Ron's legs to keep them warm. Ron had already unwrapped and discarded his jumper, and was nose-deep in a box of chocolate frogs. He allowed Hermione's encroachment upon his personal space with only minor grumbling. Harry was examining his new broom servicing kit, oblivious to anything else. Ginny let out a resigned sigh and began poking through her gifts, unwrapping her own jumper first and shrugging out of her dressing gown to pull it over her head. She moved on to a few presents, a package of quills and ink from Neville, a bottle of her favorite perfume from Hermione, a silver chain with a tiny dancing fairy pendant from Ron, a leather-bound copy of Famous Fire Eaters from Harry. There was another package, too, one that was surprisingly thick and squishy. She looked at it, then picked it up and turned it over. There was no name, no note, no card, just the strangely soft package wrapped up in brown paper. Ginny frowned, her brow furrowing. This was strange. She'd opened Neville's present already, and she couldn't think who else would be buying her gifts. She glanced up at Ron and Harry and Hermione, but they were all engaged in their own presents and not paying attention. She shrugged mentally and slid her hand under the sellotape and pushed the paper apart to see what the package contained. It was a cloak. More than a cloak. One of Gladrag's finest, mahogany brown, trimmed in mink, double-lined in the softest lamb's wool with the waterproofing spell built in. The kind of cloak that would last for ages and not wear out, and that would never look threadbare or worn. She ran her hands over the fine fabric and then stood up silently and shook it out so it fell to the floor and twisted it around her shoulders. Delicious heat instantly began to seep through her jumper. There was a warming spell on it, too. Ginny closed her eyes and curled her shoulders luxuriously. It felt wonderful. "Ginny, what is that?" She looked up at Hermione with wide eyes. "A cloak," she said. "It was with my presents." Ron looked up and frowned, brows beetling.
"Who's it from?"
he asked suspiciously. "I don't know. It was just there, and there wasn't a note or card." "Is that a Gladrag's cloak?" Hermione stood up and rested a hand on Ginny's shoulder, gently tilting her head forward so that Hermione could peer at the tag. "It is! Ginny, do you know how much these things cost?" Ginny shrugged. "A lot!" Hermione frowned, fingering the edge of the cloak with her fingers. "Who could have sent you something like this? Who could afford something like this? It must have cost a fortune!" Ginny shrugged again, bewildered. Hermione narrowed her eyes and looked suspiciously at Harry. He blinked back at her in surprise and shook his head vehemently.
"Well, it wasn't me."
"Then who..." Hermione trailed off, deep in thought. Ron peered at Ginny, beady-eyed.
"Any ideas, Jen?"
She just shook her head, as baffled as the rest of them. Hermione frowned, then drew her wand from the pocket of her dressing gown. "Let me see it. I want to check it and make sure it's not spelled or something." Ron and Harry rolled their eyes, but Ginny stood quietly while Hermione poked at the cloak with her wand, muttering under her breath. Finally, she stood back and shook her head. "Well, I can't detect anything beyond a warming spell and a waterproofing one. Seems safe enough. That is strange, though. I wonder who sent it." Ginny shrugged again. "Whoever it was, I'm not about to give it back," she said lightly. "It's far too pretty." She brushed her hands against the smooth inner lining, then reached up and unclasped the cloak, pulling it off and folding it over the back of the chair. Her brief levity didn't last, though. She sank back into her chair, frowning slightly, lost in thought. Ron had to shake her out of her reverie to send her up to change for breakfast. They trooped down in a group, Ron and Harry and Hermione in the lead, with Ginny trailing along behind, eyes on the ground, still deep in thought. There were so many students still here for Christmas that the house tables were still set up, and they joined the small group of Gryffindor first years who had already come down for breakfast. Ginny absently helped herself to sausages and eggs and poured herself a glass of orange juice, only half listening to the conversation around her.
Her attention was caught by Ron's indignant whisper. "He's looking over here! He is staring right at us, the rat!"
Ginny looked at her brother with a frown and then in the direction of his outraged glare. Ron was glowering at the Slytherin table, where Draco Malfoy had just sat down, coolly ignoring the younger students at the far end of the table. He was looking at the Gryffindor table, but not at Ron. He was staring at Ginny. She caught her breath as their eyes met, but he yanked his away and focused on his plate, two spots of crimson high on his cheekbones. Ginny smiled faintly. So the whole thing hadn't been a product of her imagination. Ron, oblivious, continued to mutter while Harry shook his head and Hermione made soothing noises. She glanced up again, but Draco was studiously not looking in their direction. Ginny sighed and pushed her eggs around on her plate. She hadn't imagined it. Draco really had kissed her and held her. But nothing really had changed. He was still himself. And she was still a Gryffindor, and Ron and Harry and Hermione still weren't noticing anything that happened outside of their little threesome, and nothing at all had changed. She gave up on her breakfast and set her fork down, leaned her elbows on the table, and looked over at the Slytherin table. Looked over at Draco, really, who was munching on a piece of toast and reading a book he had propped up beside his plate. Ginny frowned suddenly. His eyes had flickered over to their table and back to his book so quickly that had she not been watching him, she wouldn't have noticed. She rested one hand on her chin and kept watching. Not a minute later, he did it again. Once again so quickly that had Ginny not been watching, she never would have seen it. It was barely a flicker of his eyes in her direction, subtle and almost unconscious seeming. Ginny's frown deepened. When had he started doing that? It seemed almost like a habit, like it was just something that he did. She turned to tell Ron and Harry and Hermione, but stopped herself. They had dismissed Malfoy as suddenly as they'd noticed him, once he'd stopped being obvious about watching the Gryffindors, and were discussing something else, heads down and blocking out everyone else. Ginny looked at the three of them, red and black and brown heads bent together, and sighed. So much for discussing it with any of them. She watched them for a moment longer, then without saying a word, she stood up from the table and slipped out the door and up the stairs to the tower. She gathered up her new cloak and twirled it around her shoulders, and then just as silently slipped down the stairs again and out the hall doors. It wasn't as if they'd noticed she'd be gone anyway. Not as if anyone would notice. Her breath wreathed her hair in a great white mist, her feet sinking slightly into the snow that covered the courtyard like a fairy blanket. She crossed the courtyard quickly and climbed the stairs to the narrow bridge that led down to the boathouse and then stopped, looking out at the black water of the lake. Behind her, she could hear the main doors open, then the crunch of footsteps on new snow coming toward her. Ginny. She stopped and turned at the sound of her name and looked at him. He smiled slightly, a lopsided, tremulous smile, but a real one, a rarity, considering who and what he was. "Do you like your new cloak?" She curled her shoulders slightly within the fall of the soft brown fabric and smiled, extending her hand. He took it in his own, curling his fingers around hers and taking a step forward. Snowflakes were gathering in his hair, melting slightly and leaving honeyed streaks behind. It was still cold, but it could be 1,000 degrees below and not matter. There was a little spot of warmth inside her now, under her heart, and that was all she needed and all she ever would. Yes. The end. It was late, not to mention Christmas Eve, but try as he might, Draco Malfoy just could not sleep. He tossed and turned under the shimmering green covers of his warm, soft bed until he finally just threw them off altogether and got up. The air was chilly and damp in the Slytherin dungeon, so he reached for his thick flannel bathrobe and wrapped it tightly against his body. At that moment, he was glad he wore his warmest pajamas to bed. Then he reached for his slippers and a pair of warm socks, as he had decided to take a late-night stroll through the corridors of Hogwarts. Perhaps grabbing a snack from the kitchens could help him sleep? He was glad he hadn't been stripped of his prefect duties after the fiasco that had happened the year prior, and even gladder that, despite everything, he had been given the position of head boy for his final year at school. His title would allow him freely to roam the corridors and grounds without Filch, or any other witch or wizard for that matter, being able to give him troubles. As Draco meandered down one of the hallways, he decided to stop for a moment and take a look outside. Time had been going by so quickly, he found himself saddened that his family was disgraced and unable to have him home for the holidays. His poor mother was all alone with no one. Draco felt his eyes sting a bit, but blamed it on the cold, dry weather. Despite his eyes, he continued to stare at the cloudy sky and was certain that it would snow. Just then, something caught his eye. Something outside was moving. Draco realized that the something was actually a someone, but who would wander the grounds late at night by themselves, especially when it was blustering cold? Not to mention, it was Christmas Eve. His curiosity got the better of him. He forgot about his sleeplessness, his quest to find food in the kitchen, his family's disgrace, and he needed to find out who was outside. Once outdoors, Draco ran as quickly and quietly as he could towards the robed figure. Suddenly, the figure turned around. That was it. It had heard him coming. The figure turned around and stood stock still like a frightened deer caught in the headlights. It was that muggle expression, right? It slowly began backing away, making as if to run when Draco shouted out, "Stop! I won't tell!" The figure paused and pushed back the hood of its robes. Draco saw the red hair first, Weasley. But this wasn't any Weasley. It was the youngest and only girl Weasley. It was Ginny. "What do you want, Malfoy?" Her voice was so stern. "I suppose I'll earn a double detention, at least lose 100 points for Gryffindor, right?" The venom was practically dripping off her tongue as she spoke. Draco just stood there silently for a moment. He couldn't believe that the Weasley girl was outside by herself on a cold night like this. "What in bloody blazes are you doing, Weasel?" Ginny sniffed. "What's it look like I'm doing, you ferret?" Draco just shrugged.
"No idea."
A sneer crept onto his lips. "Meeting up with another one of your boyfriends, perhaps? Or perhaps with Potter?" Without hesitation, Ginny's hand flew through the air and slapped the Slytherin across the cheeks, totally startling him. "How dare you speak to me in that tone and to insinuate such things when you have no idea about anything? You're ridiculous and rude."
"Well, what was I supposed to think?" he growled while rubbing his sore cheek and still blushing from the embarrassment of being slapped by a girl.
Ginny heaved a sigh. "You're right. Sorry." She blushed a deep shade of red.
"So," Draco began, "what are you doing out here on cold Christmas Eve? Don't worry, I won't tell. No detentions or anything. I promise."
"You'll think it's stupid, and then you'll ruin the magic it has for me."
Draco arched an eyebrow and actually felt a tinge of sympathy when he realized the girl's sincerity. "What if I promise?"
"Can I really trust you, Draco?"
Her words cut like a knife, and they cut deeply. He actually gazed downwards, for he couldn't let her see his eyes. They were stinging him again. Damn cold, dry weather. He just nodded.
There was the briefest of pauses. "It's going to snow. And on Christmas Eve, I can just tell. And there's something special and magical about that. Well, for me, there is. And I needed to be outside when it happened. All right?"
Draco was stunned, almost moved. She couldn't be serious. There was nothing devious or dangerous about what she was doing or intended to do. The simplicity of it all actually touched him, and he smiled. "You want to see it snow?" he asked. The slightest hint of laughter could be heard in his voice. Ginny frowned.
"Are you making fun of me?"
"No, no!" he shouted frantically. He didn't want her to get the wrong idea. He then reached out and touched her shoulder. Ginny pursed her lips and then smiled. Shyly, Draco removed his hand from her shoulder. For several long minutes, the two stared contentedly into each other's eyes, neither uttering a word nor feeling the need to.
Truly, the moment said it all. Just then, the first few flurries began to fall. Soon more and more snowflakes fell from the sky. The silvery white shimmer of the falling snow's beauty took both Ginny's and Draco's breath away. She had been right. There was something magical about it snowing on Christmas Eve.
Suddenly, a large smile crossed Ginny's lips, and she jumped up and down happily, giggling as she did so. "Draco, it's snowing. Happy Christmas." Draco couldn't help but smile as he watched the girl dance around in the Christmas snow. It truly was a breathtaking sight. At that, he felt his heart flutter. Ginny broke him out of his reverie when she grabbed his wrist. "Let's make snow angels. I love making snow angels. It's snowing hard enough. There's enough snow on the ground now." Her voice pleaded for him to join in with her. He nodded, which caused Ginny's smile to broaden. So she let out a giggle and dropped onto the ground in the snow. She then began moving her legs and arms such that she started to form an angel pattern in the snow. Draco watched her carefully and then did his best to mimic her actions. While on the ground, he looked over at Ginny making her snow angel, and a warm feeling started to grow inside of him. She was smiling and laughing and encouraging him as he made his own snow angel next to hers. As he moved his arms and legs, he suddenly felt his fingers brush against hers. It was instant electricity, and he was sure that she had felt it too. Finally, they stood up to admire their work, the snow continuing to fall around them. "Beautiful," Ginny spoke while looking at the snow angels. Draco looked down at the red-haired girl standing next to him. "Beautiful," he whispered. He gently took her hand in his, and then smiled when he felt her squeeze his hand lovingly in response. The End. Benediction by Morning Broken Angel. Draco turned the envelope over and over in his hands, examining the old-fashioned script in the dim light. "Master Draco Malfoy, a bench in a rather lovely park, on the run, London." How the writer had known that he would be on the run and how he had enchanted the envelope to reflect that was beyond him. Glancing up at the scowling man who handed it to him, Draco said, "Professor Snape, I don't understand. Who gave this to you?" "Open the blasted letter, Draco," Snape replied shortly. "We'll have to be off in a moment. It'll be sunrise in a few minutes, and we need to be out of sight before then." Draco opened the envelope obediently. A single sheet of parchment fell out with a neatly folded square of linen. "Draco, I am sorry to say that I am quite dead if you are reading this. I had hoped to avoid that. In any event, I entrusted this missive to Severus to pass on to you should your circumstances become dire, as I expect they are. It is my heart's wish that my death came from another's hand, Draco, and I fervently hope that, in the end, you could not utter the words. However, I also understand that you faced a choice no one should have to make, least of all a boy of 16. Should you ever feel the need to shed a tear for this old man, or even for others like your parents, I hope you will accept and use the enclosed handkerchief. It is a gift for you. May your life turn out to be more than you thought, Albus Dumbledore." Draco reread the letter twice. The old man had been insane to think that Draco would cry over him. After all, it was his fault that Draco was now running for his life instead of standing at the Dark Lord's side, basking in his praise. "If he hadn't said all those things to me," Draco thought, "I'd have..."
"Draco,"
the former potions master snapped. "Let's go, now. Get up!" Draco watched the letter in his hands go up in a puff of smoke. He tucked the linen in his pocket. "I can always use it to wash my face in a fountain or something later," he thought, as he hurried after Snape, who was striding purposefully towards a dark alleyway. Draco huddled in the tatters of his cloak. It was bitterly cold, and had been for most of the day. Snape had firmly told him to not leave the basement where they were hiding while he went to find something for them to eat. That had been hours ago, and Draco could no longer feel his feet or his ears. All he could do was stare out at the small, grimy window and watch the people that passed and the twinkle of Christmas lights in the windows of the shops across the street. Another family strolled no more than 5 feet away from where Draco had his nose pressed to the dirty glass. The couple held hands with a small blonde boy who walked happily between them. His cheeks were rosy with the cold, but he didn't seem to mind. He knew his parents would take care of him and make sure he got home safe. Draco felt a burning sensation in the back of his throat as they moved out of his line of sight. Flashes of Christmases past blurred through his mind. Tearing open the packaging on his first trainer broom, his father hoisting him up to place the star on the tree, giving his mother a Christmas card he'd made for her by hand, being tucked into bed by both of them on Christmas Eve with kisses and hugs. Wiping his suddenly runny nose furiously on his sleeve, Draco told himself sternly, "I won't cry." But his nose went right on running and his eyes teared up anyway. When he felt the first tear slip over his lashes, he gave up. No one was here to make fun of him anyway. When there were no more tears to cry, he raised his arm to wipe his nose on his tattered sleeve and stopped, fumbling about in his pocket. Shaking out the folds of the handkerchief, Draco mopped his eyes before blowing his nose with a loud honk. When he held it out in front of him to refold, he stared at the fabric incredulously. Threads of ink began to unfurl across it, forming lines that swiftly became letters and words. "Only a man that can love can show true regret. My final gift to you, Draco, is this. Number 12, Grimmauld Place, London."
"What the hell is that supposed to mean?"
he asked the empty room in bewilderment.
"It's about bloody time," Snape growled as he slammed into the room. "I've been sitting out there for hours now waiting for you to have the decency to do what any starving, homesick boy should have done days ago, cry. Blast it all, Draco, must you do everything the hard way?"
He grabbed Draco's arm and dragged him to his feet, shuffling him towards the door.
"Let's go, Draco. The faster you move, the sooner we'll have a real meal and a place to clean up and sleep. Come on now. There's a good boy," the older man said with an almost paternal air as he swept the room a last time with his eyes and closed the door.
Jenny sighed gustily. She'd been trying to occupy herself with making a Christmas wreath by hand, but it wasn't going as well as she'd hoped. In fact, it wasn't going at all. Just as she thought she had enough branches carefully twined together in a circle, one branch would snap free and send the whole damn thing falling apart. She kicked at a stray piece of evergreen. "I don't even know why I bother," she said. The creak of the door behind her had Jenny swiveling in her seat. As soon as Draco Malfoy saw that the room was already occupied, he turned and left. Jenny sighed again, but this time had nothing to do with her wreath. Remarkably enough, she felt bad for him. He had arrived last week with Snape, bedraggled and so dirty that Jenny barely recognized him. They had gone right to the kitchen where a startled Molly Weasley shrieked and clutched at her heart when she saw them.
"My God, Severus, could have you taken any more time? The boy looks two steps from death's door."
He had sneered at her. "You act like I had influence on the matter. I'm just grateful that he bloody well figured it out before we either starved or froze to death."
Jenny had been sent at once to get her father and Remus while Molly used her Patronus to notify the other order members. That had been 6 days ago now, and other than what little she could make out from eavesdropping on Malfoy's 3-hour-long interview with the order, she hadn't heard him utter a single word. The one person he would have spoken to, Snape, had left the morning after he arrived and had not come back. She supposed he had gone back to the Death Eaters, though she had no idea how he was going to be able to smooth over the fact that he had helped Draco Malfoy escape. Turning back to the pile of greens that she was refusing to become a wreath, Jenny picked up her wand and smirked.
"Bugger it," she muttered. "This place is unplottable. No one will ever know that I broke the underage decree."
With a few waves of her wand, Jenny sat back and looked at the neat pile of wreaths covering the table. Patting the decorations happily, she went in search of more things she could use in her quest to provide everyone with a proper Christmas. An hour later, 3 tangled balls of twine had become twinkling Christmas lights. Hermione's abandoning knitting became a wonderful pine garlands, and a bucket of crumbled concrete from the back garden had become ornaments and a handful of leaves transfigured into mistletoe. Jenny carefully locked the doors she left and hung a sign on it reading, "Jenny's room, keep out." "Jenny!" Molly Weasley called up the stairs. Ginny, dear, come down here for a moment.
Rubbing a towel over her wet hair, Ginny clattered down the staircase.
What? She asked shortly.
I was showering. Molly grimaced.
Sorry, dear, I didn't know. Listen, your father and I are taking your brother, Hermione, and Harry into the ministry for a bit. Apparently something needs to be discussed right now. I've arranged with Remus for him to stay here with you and the Malfoy boy, so don't have to worry about being alone, all right, love?
She gave her youngest child a swift hug before shouting over her shoulder,
Arthur, are the children ready yet?
Ginny swallowed her grumbling protest at being treated like a child. After all, it appeared that Molly treated Harry Potter, the likely savior of the wizarding world, the exact same way.
Love you, Mum,
she called, as her mother herded everyone into the kitchen and passed around the pot of flu powder. Both of her parents paused to say they loved her too, but within moments the house was silent. An hour later, Ginny peered around the door frame of the sitting room. Good. Remus Lupin was slumped in an armchair before the fire, fast asleep. Now was the perfect time to initiate her plan. Standing at the railing on the third floor, Ginny looked down at the staircase and admired her handiwork. Swags of evergreen adorned the banister all the way up from the ground floor, and wreaths were tastefully placed on the wall at each landing. Flicking her wand, she sent Christmas lights flying over the railing to attach themselves to the frame of each door. A shoe scuffed the carpet behind her.
"It's not too gaudy, is it?"
she asked without looking back. The only other person in the house besides her and the sleeping Remus was Malfoy. Silently, he came to stand next to her and took several long moments to examine her efforts. "No," he said quietly before turning and leaving. A small smile tugged at Ginny's lips. How's that for the old Christmas spirit, she thought. Malfoy even broke his self-imposed silence for a moment. Shrugging, she rubbed her hands together with relish.
Now for the tree, Ginny whispered with glee. Oh, this will be such a great surprise.
When everyone returned that afternoon, Ginny was sitting at the kitchen table with a mug of hot chocolate and a grin that threatened to split her face.
What have the twins done now?
Molly demanded upon seeing her daughter's expression.
Nothing, Ginny said slyly. This was all my fault.
She waved towards the hallway negligently.
Go on, then. Everyone go see what happened.
When the delighted gasps filtered back to her, she pushed out of her chair and joined everyone.
Oh, Ginny, Molly whispered with tears in her eyes. It's beautiful. You did all this?
Ginny nodded and accepted the tight hug from her mother.
I thought we could all use a normal happy Christmas this year, what with not being able to go home at the burrow.
Oof! She was cut off when Ron plastered himself to her back and squeezed her even more tightly than their mother had.
Nice, Jen, he whispered, causing her throat to tighten.
Sure, she teased him mercilessly, but he was still her brother, and making him happy made her happy. Arthur swept her into his arms next, but the moment he released her, Hermione and Harry were right there exclaiming all over the work she had put into the decorations.
Goodness, Hermione said in wonder, staring up at the garlands adorning the staircase. Doing all this by hand must have taken you forever, Ginny, those garlands alone.
Harry elbowed her in the side and gave her a significant glance.
Oh, she whispered. Ginny, the decree for underage...
I know... Ginny sighed as quietly as possible.
But this place is unplottable, and no one will ever know, and the charms I cast were ones a third year can do with confidence.
Hermione smiled. I suppose I'd be calling the kettle black here, wouldn't I?
No, Ginny said, with two wide eyes and a good-natured sarcasm dripping from her words. Never.
Tonks, Bill, and Fleur came through the fireplace a moment later, clomping into the hallway and talking amongst themselves until they stopped to gape at the festive changes. Smiling, Ginny glanced up. Draco Malfoy stood on the third floor railing where he had spoken to her earlier, looking down on them all with a wistful expression on his face. She hurriedly looked away before he realized that she had seen him.
"Ron, Harry, are you finished with the washing up yet?"
Molly called from the sitting room where she sat with the rest of the Weasley family, as well as Tonks, Remus, and Fleur.
"Yeah, just about," came the reply.
Molly nodded at Ginny and Hermione. All right, then, you two go ahead and get those dishes put away and tell the boys they can come out here and relax. When you're done, we'll have some hot chocolate and you can each open a gift before bed. The girls hurried to comply. An hour later, Jenny stared into the fire sleepily with her present in her lap as everyone began to get up and go to bed. You too, dear, Molly said gently with a nudge to Jenny's shoulder. No falling asleep down here. Jenny smiled blearily and scooped up her purring present into her arms. Thanks again, Mum, she said around a yawn. He's so cute, and Arnold would just love having a playmate. Just mind that he doesn't decide that Arnold is a snack when the cat gets a bit older, she warned. Good night, Jenny. Night, Mum. Night, Dad, she said to the sprawled-out man in a corner chair. Once she got up to her room, she handed the kitten to Hermione, claiming to have forgotten something downstairs. Creeping into the kitchen, she quietly prepared a mug of hot chocolate and, after a moment's indecision, pulled a small package from the back of the pantry. Jenny made her way to the third floor and knocked softly on a door. When no one answered, she set the mug and package down and turned to leave, but stopped when the door opened a crack. I know that you don't like us, and would leave if you had any place else to go, she said quietly and evenly. But that doesn't mean you deserve to spend Christmas Eve alone. Here. She bent down and handed him the mug and package. It's not much of anything, but I wanted to tell you that at least one person here wishes you a happy Christmas. When she finished, Jenny turned to go.
Why? He asked in a low voice.
Because whatever you might have thought about him, Dumbledore wasn't a fool, and he wouldn't have... She swallowed and chose her next words very carefully. He wouldn't have done what he did if he hadn't thought you were worth saving. And Dumbledore's word was always good enough for me.
Draco studied her wordlessly before raising the mug to his lips. It's good, he said in that low voice that sounded rusty from disuse. Jenny nodded.
My mum's recipe, she said, feeling awkward standing here talking to Draco Malfoy on Christmas Eve.
She waved at the gift.
It's not much of anything, really, since I'm never allowed to leave this place and couldn't shop, but I...
Jenny looked at her slippers in embarrassment.
I thought you should have a gift, too. Sorry I had to make it.
She shuffled her feet nervously as he gazed steadily at her and was startled when he handed her the mug. The sudden urge to flee was nearly overwhelming, but she held her ground as he unfastened the plain brown paper that she had wrapped the present in. Staring at his gift, Draco was utterly transfixed. It was a perfect miniature of the Christmas tree she had erected downstairs, right down to the ornaments and shining star at the top. Looking at the star, he felt that burning feeling crawl its way back up into his throat. Dad, he thought, I miss you and Mother. I'm all alone here, He looked up and locked eyes with Jenny Weasley. I'm not all alone, he whispered. Cradling the mug of chocolate, Jenny tried to hide her confusion at his words.
Not if you don't want to be,
she responded softly.
Come down to Christmas tomorrow morning. You don't have to talk to anyone if you don't want to, but come down and be around people. We deserve the chance.
You deserve the chance, she added. Draco looked away from her strangely appealing eyes and back at the star adorning his own little Christmas tree. She had made him a Christmas tree and said he deserved a chance. Drawing a swift breath, he took that chance. Jenny was pretty sure her heart paused in astonishment when Draco Malfoy leaned forward and pressed his lips to hers in a soft, brief kiss. He pulled back from her quickly, as if he expected to be bit or hexed, but Jenny just stood there and stared at him. Finally, she handed him the mug back, cupped his chin firmly, and gave him a kiss of her own.
Happy Christmas, Draco, she said,
as a clock down the hall began to chime midnight. Stepping away lightly, she looked over her shoulder before going back down the staircase. Hermione woke Jenny with a shake. Here, she said, shoving a small, crudely fashioned envelope made of parchment at her. It was slipped under the door. Are you coming downstairs right now, or are you really not up yet? she asked, well acquainted with Ginny's habit of being a slow riser. Ginny waved her off. Go ahead, I'll be a few more minutes. After Hermione left, Ginny read the address with a smile before she slid open the envelope and tipped the contents into her hand. Miss Ginny Weasley, third door on the left from the staircase, second floor, number 12 Grimmel Place, London. It wasn't any handwriting she recognized, which was the sign of the sender in and of itself. She flipped open the parchment next. Ginny, I don't deserve second chances, and I don't know why you people keep heaping them on me, but your gift means more to me than I can say. It's like a physical reminder of Christmases when I was at home, and small, and happy knowing that nothing in my world could go wrong because my parents wouldn't let it. I'm not good at this sort of thing, but thank you. My gift to you is nothing special. It's a scrap of linen given to me by someone else, but it's the only thing I have that I can give to you. I found some thread last night after you left, so I could make it into something that you might consider keeping. May your life turn out to be more than you thought it would. Draco Malfoy. Ginny reread the cryptic closing remark curiously, but set the parchment aside in favor of picking up the small square of fabric. It had been hand-washed in the sink. Ginny could smell the flowery soap her mother stocked the house with. Shaking out the square of linen, Ginny felt a soft smile settle on her lips. He had embroidered her initials in lovely flowing script along a bottom corner of the handkerchief. Refolding it carefully, she tucked the handkerchief into the chest pocket of her housecoat before going downstairs to open presents. She was the last to arrive, apparently, since the sitting room was near to overflowing with people and presents. Ginny scanned the room eagerly, but her face fell as she made her way to the tree to join the others. Draco stood in the doorway uncertainly, watching the group of people boisterously carry on as presents were passed about. He had jumped when Molly Weasley called out, "Well, dear, are you planning on haunting that doorway all day? Come on in and have a seat. I believe there's a present here for you somewhere." Licking his lips nervously, Draco waded into the room, not quite knowing where to go until he saw Ginny smile and touch her pocket, where a scrap of white linen embroidered in red and green peeked out. He took the chair closest to her and sat silently as the others opened their gifts one by one until there were no more boxes under the tree. Ridiculously, Draco felt his heart sink. "Bill, darling, go be a dear and get the last gift from the kitchen for me, would you?" Molly called from the sofa, where she was hemmed in by mountains of torn paper and ribbon. Draco's eyes shot to the door when he heard Potter, Granger, and Ron Weasley gasp. "Mother?" he croaked in disbelief, staring at the blonde woman in the doorway as if she was a hallucination.
"Draco!"
Narcissa cried, charging into the room, unmindful of the presence and people that scattered in her wake. Ginny smiled at her mother and mouthed the silent thank you just before Arthur announced, "Mrs. Malfoy will be staying with us. She has been persuaded of the benefits of helping our side," he said with a small smile, "like the fact that we took in her son." Draco took his mother's teacup and went to the kitchen to refill it for her. He still couldn't believe she was really there.
"Aren't you glad you came down now?" Ginny said with a smile from the doorway.
"Did you know?" he replied, turning back so that he could look into her eyes.
"No, I didn't," Ginny said with a shrug. "But I'm glad all the same."
"Maybe that handkerchief is magical," he joked weakly. Touching the fabric in question, Ginny smiled wisely. "Or maybe it's what happens when you put someone else first. Blessings aren't linear. They come back around in one form or another." He smiled, and a shadow of a smirk twitched the corner of his lips. "Maybe they do," he agreed equably, as he twined the fingers of one hand in her hair and leaned towards her. "Maybe they do indeed."
The end.